All right, here we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Broken to Barbell. This is Tanner.
This is Sam. And this is Carly.
And today, as always, as most always, we have a special guest. Special guest, who are you?
My name is Megan Ciccone Fraser.
Hey, that name sounds really familiar. Did we interview somebody related to you on a podcast before?
Probably my husband. He's much cooler than me.
Yes, me and Dion and Carly, we talked about Mai Tai drinks.
Yes.
And Muay Thai, the sport.
Oh, that's so funny. Those are one of my favorite drinks.
I forgot about that. Tanner was like, oh, Mai Tai.
I was like, Mai Tai. And he laughed at me. He was like, it's Muay Thai. I'm like, oh, shit.
It's fair. I mean, I guess we know what was on your mind at the time.
It's safe to assume it's on my mind all the time. Well, thanks for coming on today. Let's dive right in.
Yeah, Megan, give us a little background on where you're from, where you grew up.
So I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My mom is from Mount Lebanon. My dad's from Mount Washington. And then I grew up in the Sewickley area, and which kind of means nothing because I feel like Pittsburgh is just like end up everywhere in Pittsburgh. So,
yeah.
And then I think I've lived like everywhere at this point. I went to school in Dallas, Texas, and then lived in Austin for a little bit training. I was a rower and I was training down there. And then I was invited to train with one of the Olympic coaches up in DC. So I lived in DC. And then I moved to New Zealand, and then I moved back to Pittsburgh. And then I moved to Portland, and now we're in Austin, Texas.
You have literally been everywhere. So
it's kind of ridiculous. Basically, at this point, like the only place we haven't lived in the U.S. is like California and then like the Southeast. So
so have you flown around the globe? Like, have you made a full loop?
I probably have, because before I started rowing, it's so funny. When I was rowing, I felt like every conversation started with like, before I started rowing, I used to travel a lot. Most of my like summers were spent like going places. So I went to Europe a lot. I think the only really the area of the world I haven't been to is like India and Southeast Asia. So, which is a bummer. I've always wanted to go there.
Haven't been to yet. That's the important part there.
Yeah. Yep.
So you went to New Zealand for your master's program, right? Is that why you were in New Zealand?
Yeah. So I, after I had to step away from rowing, I always, even when I was rowing and training towards the Olympics, I wouldn't say I was frustrated, but I always felt like I wasn't developing myself outside of like the boat. And that was something that always kind of like ate away at me. So when I stepped away from that goal, I knew I wanted to go back to school because I was one of the unfortunate people that graduated from college during the economic explosion. So there were like no jobs.
Yeah.
And the only way to get jobs was to have a advanced degree. So I said to myself, you know, I've worked in the U.S. at that point for like 5 years, why not gain some like international experience? So I decided to go get my MBA in a different country. And so like I applied to business schools like everywhere, and then reality kind of hit, and I was like, maybe I shouldn't try to learn a new language while also in business school. So I focused in English speaking countries and eventually decided on New Zealand. So yeah. So I ended up there, moved from DC to a dairy farm. Not a lot of people do that.
And then how did you meet Dion in New Zealand?
Yeah. So I was living in DC and I was just, I think like super burned out. I literally lived in downtown DC and I was a CrossFit coach at a gym like 3 blocks from the White House. And I think I just, it was definitely my own doing. I think like when I was injured, I partied a little too hard and had a little too much self-pity, and I just kind of hit a wall and I realized something needed to change. So I went like as drastic as possible and I moved to this like town in the middle of nowhere in New Zealand, and immediately felt isolated. So I started coaching for a CrossFit gym to make some friends, and that was where I met Dion. I was told he had a girlfriend, so I was just trying to make friends with him. I was not trying to flirt. I'll say that right now.
Was this in D.C. or in New Zealand?
It was in New Zealand.
New Zealand. Okay.
Yeah, I met him in a small town in the North Island called Whanganui, or Whanganui, depends on how you want to pronounce it. also confusing. But literally on different maps, it'll have a different name for the town. So, fun facts. I was coaching CrossFit at a small CrossFit gym in Whanganui. CrossFit Whanganui, it's still around, and it's grown a lot now, which is really, really cool. But Dion started training with us. He was preparing for a fight, and he needed a lot of help. You wouldn't know it if you follow my husband. You wouldn't know that he was, like, a mess when he first started, but he was really bad. but that's okay, because I was really bad at Muay Thai. So basically, we started trading. He would hold pads for me and teach me kickboxing, and I would help him with his strength conditioning for his upcoming fight. So that's how we met. That's Aww. How we started getting to know each other.
So I saw that's awesome. But I saw on your Instagram that your first Valentine's Day was like, I think you said you went to McDonald's for hot chocolate or something, and I think that is so pure. Like knowing you and knowing Dion, like you guys are like couple goals. I feel for a lot of people.
Oh, thank you.
But I just love you and Dion's story and whatnot. And it's very cool that you went, like you said, you were burnt out in DC. And so you said you had an injury. Like did you get injured rowing or?
Yeah. So I was down in Austin, Texas. I was training down there. I was training on my own, and I was working in a law firm, and I like just freak accident, went home for lunch to take my dog out. And, I was in a really bad car accident heading back to work that day. And I didn't have health insurance because they didn't have like none of the rules were in place yet, and I couldn't afford it. So I had no health insurance. And, I basically was more or less like denied care. They did like an x-ray and they're like, oh, you're fine, get out of here. And they had me on like so many drugs. I honestly, like, I always say to people, I don't know how I passed drug tests for the first like year after that injury, because I was on a lot of stuff. And the doctors, they were wheeling me in from the ambulance, and I just kept saying to them, I have trials in like a month. I'm not injured. And so the doctor was like, well, someone drug this girl up and shut her up. Like, he literally said that.
Oh my God.
Cause I was just like rocking back and forth in the ambulance. Like, I'm not hurt. Everything's fine. I'm good. And because I just was like so focused on like that goal, and I had to do this thing. They did like an x-ray and they're like, oh, you're fine, get out of here. And they basically kicked me out of the emergency room. So like, you know, I feel like a lot of athletes do it. I didn't feel good, and I was in a lot of pain, but my doctors had told me I was fine. So I just kept doing it and I kept going. And I went to that trials like a month later, and I placed really well, and I was invited to train with one of the Olympic coaches up in DC. So literally within 3 days of that race, I had loaded up my Volkswagen Beetle with my boat and anything I could fit in it. And I had driven to DC to start training with that team. And I just kept training, and I was in pain, and I had like cried every day, and I didn't. But, you know, no one told me anything was wrong. So I just thought maybe I was being a baby and kept going. But about like a year and a half later at another trials race, I was with a partner. So it was a doubles. So it was a two-person boat. And we placed really well. And she was like, man, that was awesome. Let's cool down. And I turned to her and I was like, I can't feel my legs. And she was like, wow, like you pushed so hard. And I was like, no, I like actually can't feel my legs. So I basically had to get like help out of the boat. And that was when I was like, okay, this is not me being a baby. And I had to pay out of pocket for like bone scans and MRIs. And that's when we found out that I had like two bulging discs and a couple of like tiny fractures on some of my vertebrae. So, and I had just been like casually rowing on it for like a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah, that's scary.
It's a little scary, but it also, like I always tell people, rowing, I think, as a sport is a lot about just like pain, like just being able to like suffer. So I think like we're the worst athletes to deal with injuries because we just don't understand the concept of like pain. It's just like a daily norm. So it makes sense to me that I didn't think there was anything wrong.
So explain a little bit about how rowing works. Cause like, did you get into it in high school? Cause like we all went to a very small school that didn't even offer soccer. So
yeah,
the thought of rowing is like, what is that outside of like being on the water?
Yeah. So my grandfather actually was a rower, and he rowed for Cornell, and he was one of the founders of Three Rivers Rowing Club in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I had like grown up around the sport, but I always tell people my family was also very like traditional. So like I think the men were pushed more towards athletics, but I like to say that as like my rebellions as a kid were like constructive. So I did the things that, like, people told me not to, like, don't do this, like, don't be an athlete. So then I did. So my school, I went to Our Lady Sacred Heart, and they didn't offer rowing either. And I had friends at Quaker Valley. They didn't offer a rowing club either. So we just created one.
Oh, cool.
Which sounds crazy because I think we were like 15 at the time. And I don't even know how we successfully did that. But I just remember within like a couple of weeks saying we thought we wanted to start a team. We were down at Three Rivers Rowing Club being introduced to this like crazy Romanian guy who ended up being like a second father to me. And he's still like one of my favorite people in the world. And we started our own team. So that was kind of how I got into rowing. And my grandfather used to always like introduce me and be like, I have 19 grandchildren, and this short little thing is the one that decided to become a rower. Like, he definitely wanted the men to be the rowers, and that just wasn't how it turned out.
That's awesome. So in rowing, are you like, is it like a race? I literally have no idea.
Yeah, it's kind of, so it's, I almost compare it to like track.
Okay.
So in the fall, we have longer distance races, so like cross country almost. The races in the fall are anywhere from like 4,500 to 6,000 meters. Mm-hmm. And they're on a river, and it can be, you know, turns. So it is kind of like cross country. And then in the spring and summer, that's like our championship season. And that's our sprint season. That's also what you see in the Olympics. And that's going to be 2,000 meters. Mm-hmm. For like the Olympic level athletes. Yeah. So that's a sprint, which I think is funny because 2,000 meters now that I'm out of it sounds like so long and terrible.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I know they still have rowing clubs in Pittsburgh because one of my professors in grad school is part of it. Mm-hmm. I want to say that Three Rivers Rowing Club.
Yeah, it's the biggest one in Pittsburgh, so that would make sense. They have a ton of clubs as well. So,
I mean, they're definitely impressive. Like, when I'm walking to work in the morning at 6:30 in the morning, I see them out there, like, in the spring when it's just getting light out. They're out on the river. And I think, like, Fox Chapel High School has a rowing.
They do.
A rowing team. So they're down there. It's just, it blows my mind that people are in the water that early.
There's the gay one too, Crew with a Q.
Oh, like, okay.
Yeah, so it's the LGBTQ rowing team.
Cool.
Yeah, and they always wear the red, orange, yellow, green, indigo, blue, purple shirts in the boat. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you
I
have
love
a,
that.
Oh, sorry. I interrupted you.
No, you're fine.
So you were a rower, and then when you were in Austin, were you doing CrossFit, or did you start the CrossFit in DC?
I started in DC. I couldn't find a job because of the economic explosion, and also it was funny when I lived in Texas and even in Pittsburgh as an athlete, that was like a benefit when I was interviewing for jobs. If you told someone you were training for the Olympics, it was like, oh yeah, we want you to work here. Like, sweet. But in DC, it was like, wait, you have something outside of work that's important to you. We're going to have to say no. It was the weirdest. I had never experienced that before. So I had to start getting creative with my income, and that's when I went to school to become a personal trainer. And I started an internship at a CrossFit gym in DC, and I basically just like fell in love with CrossFit. I always tell people it was when CrossFit was like a little more pure too. It was like, it was before the, like the big flashy games, and it really was just like so community and like person driven, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, totally.
It's funny how much it changed so quickly once the games happened. Because I was, you know, we were training with some really good athletes, like, Christy Phillips, or well, Christy Adkins, like she was with us all the time, and we all trained together a lot. And like, it's just so funny, cause I don't think that like happens anymore. Well, now it's changed. CrossFit is like completely changed again. They've gone back to their roots, which is, I think is awesome. So, but it was pure when I started it.
So you did CrossFit in DC, then you moved to New Zealand, did CrossFit in New Zealand, and then from New Zealand you moved to Pittsburgh, and then that's when I met you at Arsenal. So like what year did you move back to Pittsburgh?
We moved back to Pittsburgh in 2013. So I started CrossFit in 2009. I remember I had to hide it from my rowing coaches because they wanted to be like really controlling of the strength conditioning we were doing. But they couldn't figure out why I was getting faster, like all of a sudden. It was really funny. Like they like couldn't figure it out because, you know, I was injured and I wasn't like doing the same training as my teammates, but I was like getting a little faster, even though I wasn't doing the like the insane volume that my teammates were doing. Cause it's insane. Rowers are idiots. They ignore like 50 years of sports science. So yeah, 2009 and then, in 2011, I moved to New Zealand, and then, yeah, in Pittsburgh, I coached a little bit at CrossFit TPA up in Cranberry, and then we moved down into the city when I got a full-time job and finished my thesis, dissertation. So, yeah.
So when,
and that's when I met you.
Yes. I think I told this story on the last one. There was, like, a running wad, and you were, like, so motivating and like running beside me and yelling like, come on, Carly. And I was like thinking in my head, like, Megan, shut the fuck up. Like, I hate running. Like, I was like dying, you know, but like, you're such a nice person that I was like, I feel terrible for thinking this, but like, you know, like when you're the last person on anything, it just sucks and you hate everything. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
If it makes you feel any better, Dion thought I was a bitch the first time he trained with me because he didn't know I was a coach and he couldn't figure out why I kept yelling at him. So similar experience.
Hashtag girl power.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, like it was a very brief period of time there where I was training with like you and Dion at Arsenal, but you guys have left like a lasting impression on me and like my cousins. We all look at you guys very highly. But anyway, yeah, so like we worked out at Arsenal together briefly. And then when did you switch to the whole Muay Thai? Did I say that right?
Yeah. Not my Thai, Muay Thai.
If you said Muay Thai, I wouldn't be that mad. So
I'm the one who should ask this question. What is Muay Thai?
So Muay Thai is it's Thai kickboxing. It's the national sport of Thailand, and it's a rapidly growing sport in the United States. And I guess, you know, people will say like, what makes it different? I think the thing that makes it the most different from kickboxing is that in Thai kickboxing, clinch is a big part of the game. So that's when they like lock up and they're like kneeing each other. And they also have the use of elbows. So it's called the Art of Eight Limbs. And that's because you have kicks, punches, knees, elbows, you name it.
Okay.
So it just doesn't go to the ground, basically.
So it differs from things like jiu-jitsu and MMA and stuff because it doesn't go to the ground?
Yeah. You can sweep your opponent, and that's like really good for you to do. But once they're down, you have to let them get back up, and then start again. So it's a striking sport. And in my opinion, it's very exciting. A lot of people say they don't like, they don't like the grappling in MMA, but like all they'll ever watch is UFC. And it's like, well, maybe you should try watching some kickboxing then if you don't like grappling. So,
yeah.
But yeah. But sorry, your question was how I got into that. So like I said, when I met Dion, him and I started trading and I started hitting pads with him. And I don't think I understand the concept of doing sports for fun. It's really annoying, but like pretty much if I start doing something, I'm like, oh, I need to compete in this. So I pretty much immediately knew like I wanted to eventually compete. The only problem is I'm considered like a really big person, a big girl in combat sports. So it was kind of a uphill battle for me, and especially when we moved to the United States, because the U.S. has just a lot more issues with girls that aren't, you know, a size like 4. But I kept doing it, and basically probably around the time that you met me, I was starting to get a little more serious, and I was a little more focused on really wanting to compete. And so I slowly kind of shifted my focus from CrossFit and lifting to Muay Thai and how to get better at that and what I needed to do to get into the ring. And that probably took me about probably 2 years of like really shifting. And that's then when we moved to Portland, that's when I finally had the opportunity to compete. I finally found a gym that would let me.
So did you move to Portland for Society 9?
Yes, I did.
Okay, mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, so Society 9 is a female-founded brand that's outside. It's from Portland. It was founded by Lin Lee, and it's a women's boxing and fitness brand. So basically, excuse me, I burped. Basically, Lynn was a kickboxing and a Krav Maga instructor, and her clients kept coming to her and saying, like, where can I find gloves that fit me? And they're women, and she just kind of all of a sudden realized, like, there was this need to get gloves that were smaller. I don't know if you guys have done any boxing ever, but a lot of the gloves on the market, they're just, like, massive. They're so big. Like, my hands are bigger than my dad's. And my hands will swim in gloves a lot. So she basically started measuring every woman she knew's hands and kind of figuring out what the average depth and length and width of a woman's hand was, and kind of basically recalculated what a glove should look like if it were meant to fit a woman. And that took her a long time, and she launched on GoFundMe. And when I think Dion found the, not GoFundMe, Kickstarter, when Dion found it, I just immediately reached out to her and I was like, I don't know what you need, but if there's anything I can do to help you make this happen, like, just let me know. And we just kind of started working together on projects for the company. And when she got some funding, the opportunity to come on full time happened. And that's when we picked up and moved to Portland. So
that's badass.
Yeah.
It's incredible that, like, that would have been, what, 2015, 2016?
I think 2015, yeah.
That it took that long for someone to realize that they needed to create a boxing glove for women's hands.
Well, the combat sports, like, community, it's super male-dominated. And I think it's funny because being a part of Society 9, I see it from the inside as well, from the business perspective, but they're just like, I don't mean to talk badly, but there's a lot of dude bros, and like, they just don't recognize that women exist and that they're an opportunity for growth, and they're finally figuring it out now. So it's funny because you're starting to see all the bigger boxing brands, they're starting to make all this women's shit, and it's just super frustrating. I actually recently called out Hayabusa on Instagram because they literally took verbiage that Lynn and I developed for Society 9 and smacked it on a picture of like some babe with like you know, women's gloves. It was, I was so offended.
I think I saw that. I think I saw Dion posted it on a story or something. It was like, actually, like, Society 9 did this first, bro, or something.
Yeah, it was like, it, you know, it's bad enough that it took them, like, what, 20 years or something absurd like that to figure out that women exist. But it's even worse that they like, took the verbiage of a small female-founded company and, like, tried to use it as their own. Like, that, I just, you know, it's one thing to, like, start doing it. Like, kudos to them for finally figuring it out. But it was like, I just was so, maybe it's personal because it was, you know, our work, but I was just like so offended that they went through the trouble of like using our verbiage. Ugh, so gross.
That is annoying.
I feel like you could get in a lot of trouble for that.
Yeah, well, it's hard because now in the like world of social media, like people, there's like all these like weird trademark loopholes and, you know, I don't know exactly how that works, but their verbiage that we didn't trademark, right? It's just, it's messaging that we was consistently through our brand. It would take an intern from Hayabusa like 2 seconds to like scan through our Instagram and like come up with some like really awesome badass women saying to like slap on an Instagram and like, aren't we cool and we love women and, but it took you 20 years to figure it out. That's cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a pet peeve of mine.
So when you were in Portland, still training for Muay Thai, is that when you had your first fight or when was your first fight?
Yeah, I had my first fight. Oh gosh, what year was it? It must have been 2016. And it's what they call a smoker, which is, it's like a scrimmage, but like, I always tell people that means different things in different parts of the United States because, up in the Pacific Northwest, there's a decent Thai community there. So it was called a scrimmage, but I really think they do that just so they don't have to pay insurance and like get the athletic commission involved. Because as far as I'm concerned, like it was a fight. We had like walkout songs. There were lights. We had corners. No one, I've been to smokers where like the coaches can call timeout and like, you know, coach their athletes. That did not happen. And it was funny because the woman I fought, like she had a lot more experience than me, but she was the only opponent available to me. So, but we drove up to Tacoma, Washington, and it was in a soccer, like indoor soccer arena. And that was my first fight. It was awesome. It was funny. I wasn't nervous. Because like I had wanted it for so long. The only thing I was nervous about was I was afraid that I wouldn't like it. I kept saying to Dion, like, what if the ring, like they ring the bell and I get punched for the first time and I'm like, oh no, I don't like this. And then you're just like stuck in there for 3 rounds getting the shit beat out of you. But luckily the bell rang and I was like, this is great. This is so much fun. This is great. But leading up to it was so funny because I was so chill. You know, as a rower, we would compete like 3 to 4 times a day, like multiple days on a weekend. So I think like having one fight wasn't a big deal to me, but Dion was freaking out. He was so nervous. He'll say he wasn't, but the fact that I wasn't nervous was making him more nervous. It was so good. It was so funny because I could just tell, like, my coaches were like, why is she so chill? This is concerning.
That's funny.
Yeah, but it was great.
So how many fights have you done now?
So I've had 4 official fights. But I've had 5, including that smoker. And then I've had probably about 5 fights that I have trained for that have fallen through or not happened for different reasons. So it happens a lot, I think, in the higher weight classes for women, unfortunately. So it's a thing. It's really annoying, but it's okay.
So talk a little bit about your last fight. Mm-hmm. So like I watched it on the live stream.
And we saw posts about it online too afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. And like your whole fight camp seemed so cool. It was like cool to like follow along with your fight camp and like rep your merch. And so just talk about your last fight.
So my last fight was against a girl who's now like one of my best friends. Her name's Sierra Seifert, and she's out of Dallas, Texas. And she is a force to be reckoned with. And I knew that it was going to be my toughest fight yet. And leading up to the fight, this is not excuses because like life happens, but I would say it was like my worst fight camp to date. I was going through a lot of drama with work stuff, probably like crying like at least once a day, and just not like an easy route. Both my parents ended up having like emergency surgeries during my fight camp, and it just was not very balanced. And usually like leading into a fight, I'm super zen, and I was super, that frustrated me because Sierra and I is so funny. We both like after the fight said like, oh, I really wanted to be friends with you, but I knew we'd end up fighting each other, so I never reached out. But there was definitely this weird kind of like, we could tell that we supported each other even though we were going to be fighting each other throughout our camp. Like her and I have had a lot of similar life experiences. We both are recovering from eating disorders, and we've just experienced a lot of things that have kind of put us on the same path, and it's kind of trippy to see that. So there were a couple times in our fight camps that we like reached out to each other and were just like, hey, keep it up, like you're doing good stuff, which is like so weird to say. But I think we both respected each other, that like we wanted to bring our best. And the day of the fight was, I like woke up and it's my fault. Like I wasn't like onto it, if that makes sense. I don't know if you've ever had that, like on a competition day where you just can't click in. And I remember like getting into the cage when we showed up to the venue and like doing some footwork and kind of moving around. And it just like, I couldn't get my brain to like trigger on. And I was like, oh God, this is not the day to do this. Like, I really want to do well. Like, I deserve this. Like, she deserves this. We knew it was going to be a really good fight. And it just never, like, I never clicked on. So that was super frustrating because she is so awesome. And, like, I have a lot of skill. And I think, like, when I watch that fight, I see a ton of mistakes that I don't normally make that I was making. But she, what's funny, too, is what she knocked me out with was something that we knew she does. So now when I watch that tape, I'm like, why? But she does. She has a tendency to break away from the clinch, and she throws a right kick, or was that no right kick? Yeah, right kick. And I dropped my hand, and she had really great timing, and she caught me, and I was knocked out. It was, and then my mom cried for a week. So, but that was my first time ever getting knocked out too. So. That was a bummer.
at that point, was the fight over?
Yeah. So if you're, I think it's hard because, you know, I got knocked out. So like in my head, it was like a flash knockout. Like I remember it, but I also remember like immediately, like I on the ground, I like immediately said to the ref, I was like, I'm okay. And he was like, stay down. And I remember sitting up and like just immediately turning to my corner and being like, I'm so sorry. Cause I just felt like I still feel like I didn't show the growth that I had leading up to that fight. And to me, like, that's a really big part of being a fighter is like you aren't going into the ring or the cage to like beat someone up. You're going to display like your growth as an athlete. And I kind of felt like in that fight, I didn't do that. So like I immediately turned to my corner, which is Dion and my coach Alex, and I was just like, I'm so sorry. And you know, they're just like, oh my God, you just got knocked out, stop it. But in amateurs, they'll typically end a fight early rather than late. So in professional fights, you know, they'll let things go. But I think even if it were a professional fight, they probably would have ended it because, you know, a knockout's a knockout and you don't want someone to walk away with more brain damage than they have to. So, because that's the reality of the sport I'm in.
So from that knockout, you were concussed?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm one of those people, I guess you can tell from like my back injury, I don't pay attention to things. And so like for the first week after the fight, I almost feel like maybe I had like some adrenaline going, or I just like so desperately wanted to be okay that I was like just going through the motions. But like the second week after my fight, I started getting really bad headaches, and like, I definitely felt like it took me like a little bit. So I do marketing and I do a lot of copywriting, and I felt like it was taking me a little bit more effort to get my stuff done. And then when I started trying to go back to training, basically anytime my heart rate got up, I would get like super dizzy, headaches, like just, all the fun symptoms. So that's when I kind of reeled it in, and I just had to take a back seat. And I had already, before the fight, I had already decided that I was going to take a 6-month break from competition. So it just happened to be a little more relaxed than I had hoped.
Yeah.
So.
But that's last month, our interview, he had many concussions, and he mentioned that too, that adrenaline kind of rush. And he knew it happened the second he got that adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
You know, and just that feeling, he's like, it's, oh man, this is bad. I have the adrenaline rush, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely one of those things. It was kind of like, for me, it was almost like a slow realization that it was a little more serious than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Cause I'm super stubborn, and like, I'm that athlete that like, I need coaches to tell me to stop. So, that was kind of, it was a lot of like Dion being like, Megan, stop, like go sit in the dark, like just get off your phone. What are you doing? You know, you need to like not use your brain for a little bit and like let it heal. So that was very annoying. I hated that.
So what did you kind of have to do after that? Then you kind of realized it was a problem. So then what was the next step?
So for me, I had, one of the things that was recommended to me, but we just couldn't afford it, was to do a hyperbaric chamber. Apparently they're like absolutely amazing for concussions. But that just wasn't an option, because they're insanely expensive. And like, so there's a book called The Concussion Repair Manual, and I had emailed the author of that, and he sent me a quick kind of like 1-2 of like how to take care of a concussion, and that was like the one thing he recommended to me. And I had a lot of fighters recommend it, but couldn't do that. But the things that I could do were basically just like trying to rest my brain. Right when you're concussed, like your brain is, it's swollen, it's not happy, and it's kind of like a muscle that's injured, right? You need to rest it before you can do anything else.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was like, I had to work, like you have to make money. So when I wasn't working, like I literally couldn't be on my phone. Like I couldn't be doing that. It sounds stupid, but like trying not to think was like, and like trying to do things like, I hate meditation, but like trying to do some meditation and just relax, and like going for walks. But then I also was like really sensitive to light as well. So like giving myself breaks, and just being able to kind of like calm myself down, were probably the biggest things. And then there's other stuff, like you obviously don't want to be drinking if you've had a concussion. That's not really great for you. And there are certain foods, like anti-inflammatory foods, that will help as well. So trying to kind of adopt an anti-inflammatory diet, that was something as well. So
I've been researching that, but I haven't gotten into that just because of psoriasis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good times. That's a, Dion has pretty bad eczema, which I know is not the same, but like,
it's in the same ballpark.
Yeah. Just trying to play with diet, and like, it's crazy how much you can help your body just by like not eating or eating something.
Yeah.
So my problem is like, I love wine.
Oh yeah.
So
well, that's, I noticed we're totally on a tangent now, but I noticed after drinking how much worse my psoriasis can be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, alcohol is literally like poison. It's literally poison.
Quite literally, yeah.
Yeah, your body is like, what are you doing? Please stop.
But at the same time, I want more.
Yeah, right? Right? That's like, I've always loved wine. I like grew up around wine. And so that's like my one, guilty pleasure.
I feel you there. Yeah. So you also, in this, was it after the concussion that you had your cancer scare?
Yeah. So basically as soon as my concussion started getting better, I went in for my annual pap smear, and I had had a couple of irregular ones, already. But this time the doctors were like really concerned, and it's like never good when the doctors are concerned.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like asked the doctors, like, should I be like worried? And they were like, we're not like excited about this. Like they wouldn't really like conclude what was happening. And they basically were like, this isn't like, it's not looking good. And it took a while to get the biopsy done. And then once we got the biopsy done, it took like a week or two to get those results. And luckily it came back, negative. Like, thank God.
That's good. I bet that wasn't easy to kind of have in the back of your head though, during that time.
No, not at all. And I think, I'm trying to remember, we found out that was, I think that came up like 2 weeks before we found out I was pregnant.
Oh my.
So it was just like one of those things, you know, it's so weird because, you know, that's unfortunately like very common now is, cervical cancer. And so I just like, I was trying really hard to tell myself that, but even just like saying like, I might have cancer it was like really emotional for me. I'm sure like everyone would say that, but like, I don't know why, but I just didn't expect that. Like I just, the thought of that was really scary to me.
Yeah.
And then before we had even had the biopsy, the day before we had the biopsy done, I found out I was pregnant. And so there was a second layer of, if we find out that I have cancer, like there might not even be able and anything I can do until we have the baby, or, you know, or we might have to completely change treatment. So it was just like terrible, multi-layered, frightening thing.
Well, and it just, you had no answers too, you know?
Yeah.
You didn't even have, like enough information to take you there. So who was part of your support system while all of that was going on?
I mean, honestly, Dion is the biggest one. He's like my ride or die. I mean, he actually is because he's married to me. But he's just like, he's amazing. I feel like we're really lucky because we kind of, it's almost like a tag team. Like when one of us doesn't have the strength to like deal with what we're dealing with, like we tag the other partner in and it's like, it's their turn to like help us out. I feel like we do a good job of communicating when we need that support. And he was just really awesome. And, you know, at the time we were working together. So if we needed to go like step into a conference room and just have a quick cry, we could.
Aww.
He's huge and he's just awesome. And then I had a few teammates as well that knew that it was something that I was dealing with. And actually I had one teammate that knew that was something I was dealing with. And she also kind of made a point of like always checking in on me and, you know, just making sure I'm okay and reminding me that like, you know, other people have gone through this, like you're strong. If you do have it, it's going to be okay. Like we're going to make it. And I think that's just, you know, I think that's the best you can do, really, especially if you don't know.
Yeah.
You just have all these what ifs floating around making you cry randomly.
I swear to God, I think Dion said almost something identical during his interview about tag teaming.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, it's your turn to take care of this shit. Help.
I wish I could say that's surprising. We talk a lot.
It's like one of those I'm marrying your best friend kind of moments, you know?
Yeah.
he's really awesome. It's funny, you know, a lot of people, my parents included, were like, why are you going to New Zealand? And like, I do feel like it was like fate a little bit. Like I would never have met someone like Dion had I not moved to some random tiny town in New Zealand. So
it's so funny how those little seemingly small decisions lead to crazy outcomes.
It's insane. Yeah. Like it's insane. So, but yeah, he's awesome. If you ever need support, just reach out to Dion, everybody. He's great. He's a good cheerleader.
Aww. Is he there with you?
He's in the other room. Okay. I can hear my dogs barking, so I think he's probably trying to shut them up. All right, we have like a 1.5-year-old mutt, and she's not the brightest bulb, so Aww. She barks at everything.
Well, it's exciting to hear about your pregnancy.
Yeah, congrats to you guys.
Yes, thanks. Absolutely. Well, my son is turning 1 here in a couple weeks, and I can't believe it. But I wanted to ask you, have you been able to still like work out while you've been pregnant? I know the first 6 months for me were literally miserable. Like I couldn't even move. I was so sick all the time. So how have you been able to keep up with that?
So I'm now 18 weeks. And I can honestly say I have never experienced fatigue the way I have. Like, I can't even explain it. And it's gotten better. But that first trimester, I didn't have morning sickness, but I did have like insane nausea. Like, and I don't want to call it like vertigo, but the nausea was so bad that like it was hard for me to function. But the thing that like really held me back was the fatigue. Like I just slept like all the time. Yep.
I get that completely. I couldn't, like, I would say I was morning sick, but it would last all day. Like if I ate like anything weird, not even weird, if I had like mac and cheese, I would just be like throwing up everywhere. So it's like, it's not morning sickness. It's all day for some people.
Oh, for sure. It was just an all day. Like I just felt like something was draining the life out of me at all times. And like, it was so funny because, you know, I went from, you know, cutting weight and getting ready for this fight. So like eating insanely healthy / nothing to like the only thing. Cause so my food aversions have been really bad, and I'm like usually a really healthy eater. Because of my background with eating disorders, I try really hard to like, make sure I'm eating foods that don't like trigger me. But since I got pregnant, like there was this like 1 week when like the only thing that sounded like it wouldn't make me throw up was like pad thai. And I don't even like pad thai, but I literally ate it like 4 times 1 week.
That's so funny. I could only eat pasta sides, like the really unhealthy $1 ones at Walmart. I could only eat the Alfredo kind for like all 9 months pretty much.
It was like, this is it. Yeah.
It's like, it's the complete opposite. Like now I'm just like, I feel like I'm really lucky if I am able to like get myself to go for like a long walk and like eat a couple of vegetables. Like I pat myself on the back when I've had a salad with like, and the other thing is like, I hate creamy dressings, but right now the only way I can get myself to eat a salad is if it has like some gross dressing on it. It's so weird. It's so weird, but I just like, I'm like, thank you. Good job, Megan. You gave your baby some vegetables.
That's so funny.
Let's not talk about the bottle branch, but.
I just think that a lot of women, especially on social media, they see people working out during their entire pregnancy. But until you like go through it and you're like to the point where you can't even get off the couch, you're so tired or you're so sick. Sometimes that just doesn't happen. There are outliers that can work out the entire time. And then there is like me and you that just getting up and walking is enough that for us.
Yeah. I will say like it's messed with my head a lot. Like fitness and like training is such a huge part of my identity. And I think because of my background, like I think training keeps that in check, keeps my like negative self-talk in check. Cause it's like to me, working out is like a daily reminder of what I'm capable of. And not having that has been really hard, but I am trying to focus on, you know, the fact that like, you just have to do something. Even if it is like, if you call wrestling your dog into the bathtub, like a workout, that's fine. I might've done that the other day. But It is. It's so funny. Like, you see all these, like, glowing, like, Zen yoga moms on, like, Instagram. And meanwhile, you're, like, on the couch eating your second set of fries. And you're like, what is wrong with me? But I think, like, it's just, I am definitely learning that pregnancy is such a, like, personal journey. And you just have to kind of do your best to do your best. That's, like, that's all you can do. I assume that's what motherhood's going to be, too. Is a lot of me messing up and just being okay with it.
Absolutely. That's pretty much what we have on our outline advice. And my advice is to not take in so much advice that you're like, what the hell is going on? It comes naturally. You know, when you're messing up, it happens, and then you just move on to the next time. So that's my advice, is to not, especially mommy groups on Facebook, stay away. It is terrifying.
I'm on some of these moms groups on Facebook, and like, I'm slightly obsessed with them because they are so funny. Like, there's just so many different opinions and attitudes, and like,
yes,
some women are like so aggressive about it. And I think I'm a moderate in like everything I do. Like, I'm just kind of like, can't we just all get along and like find the middle ground and just be like stoked that we're all trying? But obviously that's not the way people feel. My favorite is when like vaccinations come up. Oh, that's the best.
Those are probably just like 300 comments.
Yeah, just fighting.
It's so good. I just want to get the popcorn out and like watch my book tick over.
It's like that meme of Michael Jackson eating the popcorn in Thriller.
Yes. That we can't even use anymore. I'm devastated.
Oh, I guess I didn't really think about that. Yeah.
I wanted to like use it the other day on a comment thread, and I was like, I can't use this anymore. He's a monster. I mean, we already knew that though. We all knew it. Come on.
Well, it's kind of like the Kevin Spacey thing, that there were like all these jokes for years and then it came out and everyone was so offended and I can't believe it. And I was like, wait, didn't we all already know this?
Yeah, he's a creepy dude too.
Like, I was like, this isn't a shocking revelation.
You can't tell me that if you ran into him in an elevator, your internal alarms wouldn't have been like, get to the far corner. Like,
he is creepy.
Kevin Spacey. Yeah. And it's a shame too, because Frank Underwood was such a good character, and it's like, why did you have to a creep?
But like, he always plays extremely creepy people.
Yeah.
You know, like him in Seven.
Seven.
That's one of my favorite movies.
Carly's thinking about Seven right now.
What's in the box? No. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, you know, I've seen so many people on Facebook trying to defend Michael Jackson. And it's like, dude, even if half or a quarter of what these people are saying is true, that's terrible. Like, he's a monster. Even if it's only like a quarter true. Like, it's one of those things that where there's smoke, there's fire. And it's like, I just find it interesting. You know, I get it. He was like an idol to a lot of people. Like, Dion grew up idolizing him, and it's been like really hard for him. Like, he is as silly as that sounds. Like, he anytime like a Michael Jackson song comes on to like one of his Spotify playlists, he's like, I can't listen to this anymore. And like, it's just not that hard to have compassion for people who were victims of something. Like, I get it. He was your idol, but it turns out he's a terrible person. So, like, let's move along. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Well, that's not that hard. A friend of mine was saying the same thing, I think, about Louis C.K. I loved him as a comedian, loved all his stuff, and now I've got to totally rethink the whole thing, you know? And, like,
yeah.
I guess that's the hard part about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, you just have to recognize, like, at least, again, for me, the way I see it is, like, what do you hold more value in? Like, this idol, and, like, the thing about idols is they're not people, right? Like, they're an idea of someone, mm-hmm, and, like, what they are presenting. Or do you value real people and, like, what this person has done to them? Like, you have to make that decision. Like, what is more important to you? Like, what do you put more stock in? These real people that are experiencing real damage, or this idea of a thing that you had up on a shelf that was shiny.
Yeah.
So is that a documentary on Michael Jackson? Because now I need to watch it.
It's on
HBO.
Yeah, okay.
Is it just one, like one?
It's Leaving Neverland. I think it's two.
Two-part series.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah, because I was over at someone's house last night and their roommate started watching it, but I didn't get to like sit and watch it, so I really want to watch it too.
I did see a clickbait article about how Paris has addressed it. His daughter.
Yeah, I read that.
Was it, she really did address it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, she's like really angry about it, but
I never understood people,
idolize whoever you want, but I never understood the hype over Michael Jackson.
It's probably just not our generation.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we also grew up in a generation where we don't have celebrity like that anymore. Like we see people so much all the time, all over the place. We don't have like that guy.
Yeah, that's true.
One guy.
Yeah, there's 12 people like that aren't quite as big as that, you know?
Yeah.
But Lady Gaga.
Well, I love her. You do make a good point.
I love her too. So I'm going to Vegas in July for my next meet. And of course, the month of July, she's like in Florida or something. She's not she's not doing her residency out there that month.
Oh no, that's terrible. Well, wait. Oh, and the Backstreet Boys are gone too. Devastating, right? Or are they still there?
I don't think
they might be gone now because she's there, but I don't know. It's not like there's only one casino in Vegas.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, she would have been the highlight. Oh well.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
I'll see her someday. So, do you know what you're having? Or not yet?
Not yet. We find out on the 19th.
Oh,
so.
Man. Do you have any feelings? Do you think it's a boy? Do you think it's a girl?
Everyone keeps saying they think it's a girl. So aww. That's weird. I have a few friends who are into the psychic side of things, and they all keep saying they think it's a girl. So
what do the mommy bloggers say, like on Facebook?
Well, according to like, right. The problem is they all have a 50% chance of being right. Right. So when we first went for our first appointment, the baby's heart rate was really high. And I forget what the number is now, but there is like one thing that it's like, oh, if your baby's heart rate is above this on average, then it is a girl. So that's another like indicator that could be a girl. But Deanna and I keep saying that means we're 100% having a boy. Like the fact that everyone's so sure, we're for sure going to have a boy. So.
Are you going to post about it, or are you going to keep it to yourselves?
Oh no, we'll post about it.
Okay.
And we won't be doing a gender reveal.
We can't wait to find out what it is.
You know what you should do? You should do like a
boxing.
A Muay Thai gender reveal.
You should have Dion like roundhouse kick a bag of something.
A bag full of powder.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like, I know like if we did that, we would totally be one of those couples that ends up in the fail videos. Like that's like our destiny.
That's what. So Sam and her husband are both here, actually, and they can talk a little bit about that.
Tell us about your gender reveal, Sam.
I would advise against a baseball theme when you've never touched a baseball in your entire life.
Yes.
I threw the baseball in, literally my husband swung and it missed and it fell on the ground and it exploded.
Oh, no. That's perfect.
That
I like.
So funny.
I really like the so. Dion, this is a fun fact about my husband. At night, he likes to watch fail videos and like videos of like kids falling because they make him laugh, and he like says it puts him in a good mood before he goes to bed. I think our karma would like mean that we would end up in those videos because Dion has laughed at the expense of so many other people at this point, but. I've seen like so many gender reveal fails. Like my favorite are the ones where they have the box up in the tree and they go and pull the string on the box and it falls on their like other child.
Yeah.
How does he feel about the cheese challenge?
The cheese. Oh, he loves it.
I have been dying over the cheese challenge.
He sent a link of it to me. I was like, we are not doing this to a poor child that thinks we're the world.
I did it to my boyfriend, but I was too aggressive with the cheese throw, and it, like,
whipped
poked his eye out.
Oh, no. Again, that's something that would happen to Dion and I.
I saw one of those gender reveals. It was, like, one of the big boxes of balloons, and they opened it up, and it was, like, rainbow-colored balloons. Like, they got the birthday balloons instead of either pink or blue.
That's hilarious.
And then, also, I had to unfriend someone on Facebook because they did their gender reveal. It was for a boy. I would have done it anyway, but the guy was literally spinning the back tire of a street bike over some chalk. And I was like, that's
no.
It. I was like, you're getting unfriended for that.
Isn't it funny like how Facebook does that? Like it just like it has exposed things about our the people in our lives that like we're like, I never knew this about you, but now that I do, I don't think we need to meet again.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I even knew this man, so it was an easy delete, but
that's good.
But yeah, we're looking forward to finding out what you guys are having, and hopefully we'll get to see you in Pittsburgh sometime soon.
We do. We need to come visit. Dion and I were actually just saying that yesterday. Like, it's been way too long since we've been back for a visit.
Yeah, let us know. We'll have to do something fun.
So we'll get you guys all doing Mai Tai.
Yes.
Mai Tai.
In my living room.
So this is far off, but once you have the baby, do you have any intentions of like training or doing another fight camp in the future, do you think? Or do you not know at this point?
For sure. I mean, my intention is definitely to get back to competition. I don't know how long that will take. I think it varies person to person. I would probably have to like fight at a higher weight class for the first few times, which is no fun. But that's something I want to do. I have every intention of doing that. The way I see it, like, you know, I want to be a good example and role model for my kid. And I think, you know, stepping away from something you love just because you've had a child isn't like the greatest way to do that. So
I 100% agree with that. Like,
turns out I like love motherhood so much, and I like never want to like step away from my child, but I have a feeling I'm not gonna be that way.
So. Be like, yes, you're here, yes, I care about you, but I still exist, thanks.
I just want to like do cool things alongside of them.
That's yes. Like yeah, that's going to be the fun part.
Yeah. And do it together. We'll have a little gym rat baby who's just like punching bags by the age of like 2 and rolling around in jiu-jitsu. And I do want our kids to do jiu-jitsu. I think it's like a really good way to teach children like mechanics and like body awareness. And, you know, the bonus points for self-defense as well. Like gymnastics is also amazing for that. But jiu-jitsu won't stunt their growth, so I'll take that.
Yeah.
Tanner and I recently became hooked on jiu-jitsu.
As in, attended one.
One class.
Attended one starter class.
Where did you go?
True Believer. That's awesome. It's in Lawrenceville.
That's awesome.
It was fun.
I was on like such a high from that class. Like it was one class and I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to go back.
That's because you killed Lou.
I know. Now that I know how to choke someone out, I'm like, no one better mess with me.
You're
on the street.
A monster.
That was the last piece of information Carly ever needed to know.
Yes.
Yeah, right. That's I did a lot of jiu-jitsu. I actually tell people that have like, you know, even if it's just like minor back injuries, once they start healing, like I always recommend jiu-jitsu to a lot of people because I think it was a big part of me regaining like athletic movement and mobility. I think it was like a big part of that. I did a lot of jiu-jitsu before I decided to just focus on Muay Thai. And I think it really helped me a lot. So I think jiu-jitsu is like an awesome sport. I can't speak highly enough about it, but for me, I just really enjoy hitting and kicking things.
I love that.
Yeah. You're definitely a badass.
I think you're a badass, so there's that.
Woo! Thanks.
Yeah. Well, Megan, do you have anything else to add today?
I don't think so. I feel like I've talked your ears off. I went off on tangents. Thanks for dealing with me.
Oh, it was perfect. It was fun to listen to.
Yeah. It was cool hearing the full story because like I knew bits and pieces, but getting the full story was definitely interesting.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Tell Dion, give Dion our love.
I will. I'll give him a hug for you all.
All right, thanks.
All right, have a good day, guys. See
thanks, you,
later.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
That's, I love, I'm not editing that out. That's staying in.
Leave it on. Yeah. She's awesome.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah, real quick.
We really appreciate it.
Real quick before we go, we just want to level set with everyone. We are not professionals in the mental health field. Nor do we claim to be. We never will be. We've never claimed to be. All three of us have different, very different backgrounds, like for what we do for our professional work. This platform, this podcast, is a hobby, and
all we ever wanted to do was create a space for people to like open up about their stories with mental health, mental issues, et cetera.
Yeah. And when we started, it was for us, you know, and then it's kind of grown as we've gone over the past 3 years.
Yeah. And all we can do really is provide resources or contacts to professionals when it comes to mental health. So, we can't give that professional advice. So
yeah, we like hearing from you guys, and we understand when you want to talk to us, but at the same time, there's only so much that we can do, and we will always refer you out to somebody else if you need numbers or anything like that. But just know that we aren't equipped to deal with these kinds of things.
On a professional level.
On a professional level.
On a friend level, sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And like we push therapy. We think that therapy is a good thing, like for you to seek a professional mental health therapist.
And definitely, you know, if you don't have health insurance or something, you can even reach out to therapists. Sometimes they'll do sliding scale based on your income. It's to each person to see what really works for them.
Yeah. And also, whenever we posted about therapy a couple weeks ago or last week, I don't know what it was. I have no concept of time right now, but, someone commented and asked, like, what about for people that don't have health insurance? And then we had another one of our listeners reach out and say that some of the local colleges will do therapy. What did she say? Something about students.
Yeah, so students getting their, was it their grad or their master's?
Yeah.
They will need patients to come in on a volunteer basis, and they'll do it for free, and they'll be monitored by their professors. Somebody who is qualified.
Yeah. So if you reach out to your local college, that could be an opportunity.
Yeah. And there's probably no right way to go about this. It's going to be per person what works best for you.
Yes.
Yes. But if you are struggling, if you do have suicidal thoughts, the suicide hotline is 1-800-273-8255.
Again, that's 1-800-273-8255.
Yeah, but as always, guys, thank you for your support. We're looking forward to another year full of interviews, among other things.
Woo!
Suicide Walks, August 17th.
There you go.
Links in our bio if you want to join our team.
All right, everyone. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.